This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Dennis Canty, Pacific Northwest Director for American Farmland Trust. Dennis Canty is here today to speak about the report, Losing Ground, Farmland Protection in the Puget Sound Region, and to discuss the potential of our Puget Sound food shed to produce the food we need. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to begin by telling us about the American Farmland Trust?
I'd be happy to. American Farmland Trust was founded in 1980 on the East Coast. There were a number of people that were very concerned about the loss of farmland in New England and the Mid-Atlantic states. And they came together largely out of the environmental community to preserve farmland in the area.
And would you briefly talk about the projects that you're currently working on here in Washington State?
Sure. So we just finished up this study of farmland protection in the 12 counties around Puget Sound. So that's something that we've been working on off and on for about 9 months or so. We have a project going on called the Western Washington Food Shed Study, and that looks at the possibilities of growing local food in the 19 counties in Western Washington. And then we're doing a project right now on the most threatened farm landscapes in the Pacific Northwest, so Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Western Montana, and looking at those landscapes that are most threatened by urban growth, second home development, water quality issues, et cetera. So those are the biggies right now.
What is the status of our farmland here in the Puget Sound region?
We have about 600,000 acres of farmland right now, which sounds like quite a lot of land until you realize that we had about 1.4 million acres of farmland as recently as 1950. So we have seen fairly high rates of farmland loss through the region in the last 60 years. We've been losing about 14,000 acres of farmland a year. One thing that we're kind of encouraged about is that we see a lot more effort recently to protect that 600,000 acres that remain.
What are the reasons for the loss of the farmland here in the Puget Sound region?
It really tracks population growth to a large extent. Some of the easiest land to develop has been that fertile farmland and floodplains near our cities. And so as a consequence, as we've grown, we've kind of grown out and suburbs have pushed into the farm landscape. And so if you look at the major peaks in population growth here, they pretty well track the major periods of farmland loss as well.
In your report, the Losing Ground report that we'll be talking about, you state that county governments are in the driver's seat when it comes to farmland. Would you explain?
Sure. Under Washington state law, counties have most of the authorities that are needed to protect farmland. So they have the authority to do land use regulation and zoning for farmland, and that's really one of the most important things they can do. They also set property tax rates and can provide property tax relief to farmers if they wish. They also control the funding that's necessary to purchase development rights, which is one of the most important things that they can do. So they have all of these authorities under Washington state law. Counties are really in the driver's seat in terms of what happens to farmland here.
What was the goal of your study that led to the report, Losing Ground? What questions did you try to answer?
Well, first of all, we really didn't know exactly what was happening out there on the landscape. We had a sense that we were seeing high rates of farmland loss across the region. We also had a sense that this was largely localized in areas of high population growth. But we really needed to confirm some of our assumptions about what was happening with farmland. The second thing we were trying to do is recognize those counties that are doing a really good job on farmland protection in hopes that we can influence the other counties that may be not doing quite so well. And so bring everybody up to a higher norm in terms of farmland protection. And the third is just get the word out that we're paying attention. I think that's one of the issues with farmland protection. Farmland loss is a very slow and incremental process. Oftentimes it's not noticeable until it's done and a new subdivision pops up next door or down the road. And so it's really important that we send the message that we care about these issues, that we're paying attention to what's happening in our communities, and that we will stand up for farmland.
How did you go about doing the research for your report? How did you set it up?
We did most of it online and then confirmed a lot of the information through interviews with county staff. There's an amazing amount of information available online. about these counties. So you can get into the land use regulations, zoning maps. If you dig deep into county code, you can find out what's allowed in each one of those zones. You can get a lot of information from the tax assessors about property tax rates and such. And so we had two interns that we brought into our office last summer from the University of Washington, and they dug into all this information and then kind of late in the study did a set of interviews with county staff to confirm what we had learned.
Before we go into more detail, would you tell us the key findings of your report?
I think I've already previewed some of these. You know, one of the things that we learned in the course of the report is that we have about 600,000 acres of farmland left here in the region, that with regard to agricultural zoning, we have some counties that have very strong zoning and some very, very weak. As a matter of fact, one of the counties doesn't have any agricultural zoning whatsoever, which is kind of a surprise. Property tax relief, which is available in all of the counties, has not been used as widely as we expected. So I think only about half of the farmland in the region is getting preferential treatment in terms of property taxes. So we found a very mixed bag in terms of the county programs, several that were really quite excellent and quite a few that were lagging behind.
Which factors are most critical in a farmland protection program?
I think with regard to the protection of the bulk of farmland, there's no way you can overcome weak zoning. That's really kind of the most critical aspect. If counties were only going to do one thing, it would be to try to get all of their farmland into protective agricultural zoning. And zoning is not permanent. I mean, it really depends on the goodwill and the intentions of county government. And so somebody needs to be paying attention to make sure that those things don't change with every new administration. But nevertheless, if you're talking about protecting the bulk of farmland, which is really kind of a critical need here in Puget Sound right now, zoning is the most important tool. And on some of the most important farmland, it's great to actually have that supplemented with something like a purchase of development rights program or a transfer of development rights programs. And these are kind of complicated, but basically, if you can imagine that the ability to develop on a piece of property can be separated from the property itself in the form of a development right, and that can either be bought or transferred through a government program onto another piece of land. And because the urge to develop property is the vehicle where farmland falls out of farming generally, if you remove the development rights, you provided a much higher level of farmland protection over time.
What are the funding options for purchasing development rights?
Well, I wish there were more. Several of the counties have their own funding sources for purchase of development rights. It's one of the things that we really called out about the Skagit County program, for instance. They have a program that provides all of their conservation futures tax money, which is a small property tax leveled on all property in the county. They provide 100% of that to farmland protection. So it's about $700,000 a year. They're often able to match that with a variety of state and federal sources to get it up in the $1 million, $1.2 million range. So every year, Skagit County puts that kind of money into farmland protection. And as a consequence, they've been able to preserve about 8,000 acres of farmland in that county. So we would love to see that kind of model everywhere around Puget Sound.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Dennis Canty, Pacific Northwest Director for American Farmland Trust. Our topic is the report, Losing Ground, Farmland Protection in the Puget Sound Region, and also the Western Washington Foodshed Study. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. In addition to land use and development rights, what else helps protect farmland? What other policies?
There's a saying in the farmland protection industry that the one thing that provides most protection is successful farmers. If you have thriving farmers, it tends to keep them in business and keep them on the land. And one of the big difficulties with farming in this day and age is that it's a very undependable industry. It's been sort of beset by a lot of issues about the global agricultural economy, and local farmers increasingly have to compete in a global environment in order to survive. What we're seeing now in the region is the emergence of a local food industry. And that has tremendous promise to keep a lot of these farmers in business. The possibility that there'll be much more direct linkages between the producers and the consumers that you're now seeing in places like farmers markets and community-supported agriculture. If we see that continue to grow, that, I think, will do more to protect farmland than anything we could do otherwise. The way we see our challenge right at the moment is making sure that we maintain that land base while the economy, the new local food economy, grows so that those people have some place to raise their food.
Would you say more about the farmland protection programs in the counties of the Puget Sound area?
Well, first of all, there are three counties that we recognize as kind of the top of the heap, and that's Skagit, King County, and Whatcom County. And we're recognizing all three of those with awards for the excellence of their farmland protection program. And particularly Skagit counties, which was far and away the top-ranked county in our analysis of the 12 counties around Puget Sound. It seems to have all of the ingredients of a really successful program. You know, we just talked a little bit about that purchase of development rights program and the fact that they're continuing to whittle away at protection of the farmland in the county. They have very, very strong agricultural zoning, 40-acre minimum lot sizes, large blocks of contiguous farmland being protected through their zoning. And they also have kind of an advocate position within county government to represent the interests of agriculture in their county processes. So oftentimes, farmers feel sort of taken advantage of because of land use regulations and changes in county processes, and having somebody inside government to represent their interests is a huge issue. There's also a farmer on the county commission up in Skagit County. So I think all of those things are very, very helpful. King County is notable basically for doing a lot of early work on farmland protection. Back in the late 70s, they passed a big bond measure that set aside $50 million, which was, of course, very serious money at that point, to preserve development rights. And as a consequence, there's about 13,000 acres of preserved farmland in King County. Whatcom County, very, very strong program. They're really focusing on trying to protect 100,000 acres of farmland in the county, which would be quite an accomplishment. So those are kind of the front runners in terms of the counties. And then, you know, we found, unfortunately, a few that are kind of lagging quite a ways behind, that don't really have the zoning or the development rights purchases or the participation in tax incentives. So there are three right at the top. There's a cluster kind of right smack in the middle, and there are a few down at the bottom. And of course, one of the things that we're trying to do is bring those at the bottom back up to the middle or the top, ideally.
What seem to be the reasons for these different successes or failures, as it were?
Well, I think the successful programs tend to have a few things in common. One, I think very strong community interest in farmland protection. So Skagit County, very much part of the culture, and likewise in King County, rural King County. So there's been public interest in farmland protection in these counties for a long, long time, 20 or 30 years. Getting off to an early start makes a huge difference. One of the things that we're seeing looking around Puget Sound is a lot of the problems that we're encountering now with land use and development patterns, we're actually locked in under a set of zoning decisions that were made 20 or 30 years ago. So at that point, there was sort of a go-go mentality here in Puget Sound that was very pro-growth and widely shared among county governments around the region. And as a consequence, a lot of the farmland actually got zoned for rural residential development at that point. And I've heard rural areas described as urban land in waiting, which I think is kind of a chilling but fairly correct analysis, I'm afraid, that under these zoning codes of the 1970s and 1980s, there was just an anticipation that sooner or later we would need a lot of that land, which was in farming at that point, for urban development, and that we might as well zone it now for that use. And we're living now with the legacy of a lot of those zoning decisions at that point. So once the people, the county commissions and councils back then decided that this land was suitable for residential use, It established a residential value for all of this farmland, which was higher than the farm value, and made it very difficult for farmers to expand or new farmers to get into the business. Made it quite easy for residential developers to use that farmland to develop new subdivisions and shopping malls. And that was really the origin of a lot of the trouble that we've seen since.
How effective have the better farmland protection programs in the counties been in actually protecting farmland? Does there seem to be a correlation?
Well, yes, absolutely. It doesn't really require much but to drive north into Conway and go out across the Skagit Flats on the way to Anacortes, and you'll just see these huge blocks of farmland on both sides of the road, pretty much as far as the eye can see. And were it not for Skagit County's strong program, that definitely would not happen. Likewise, if you go to the Enumclaw Plateau just south of Seattle, southeast of Seattle, you'll see the same pattern, farmland all the way across the valley floor. And that simply wouldn't be the case if King County hadn't gotten out in front of this situation. What you'd see instead is a lot of situations like the Duwamish River corridor. And I remember back in the 1970s, as I'd drive up I-5, you could look across from I-5 and you'd see this big agricultural valley spreading up, you know, towards Kent and Auburn. All of that is gone at this point. And it's simply gone because people weren't really paying attention. And the wrong zoning went in, and instead of farmland now, it's all a bunch of low-density, tilt-up warehouses. And it's a really good illustration of what shouldn't be happening here in the region. So here, within, you know, the stretch of 30 or 40 miles, you have some of the best examples and some of the worst examples of how to deal with farmland.
Well, you've alluded a bit to this earlier, but would you underscore the societal forces that are acting toward and against farmland protection?
Well, the ones against have largely been the pressures of development and of population growth. And here in this region, we've grown pretty rapidly. I mentioned before 1950, when we had this 1.4 million acres of farmland here in the region. Well, at that point, we had about 1.3 million people. So we had about 1 acre of farmland for every person here in the region. And oddly, that's about what the UN says is necessary to support the average Western diet, about 1 acre per person. Well, since then, we've lost about 800,000 acres of that farmland, and we've more than tripled our population, so we're up around 4.3 million people at this point. And as the population has grown up to that level, it's just consumed a lot of that farmland. So that's the biggest pressure that we see. The countervailing pressure, the pressure to protect farmland, a lot of that is coming from the local food movement and the interest that people have in eating locally. And we see this as a tremendous force for good in terms of farmland protection, that when people really see the connection between local food and their local farms, that they become not only local foodies, but local food and farmies, which is really what we're trying to accomplish.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Dennis Canty, Pacific Northwest Director for American Farmland Trust. Our topic is the report, Losing Ground, Farmland Protection in the Puget Sound Region, and also the Western Washington Foodshed Study. What should we do next to help protect farmland in the Puget Sound region? What are the next steps?
Well, there are a lot of things that we can do as individuals that would be really quite helpful. The first thing I'd mention is kind of the funnest part of the whole thing, which is to continue to eat local. So know your farmer, support your local farmer, keep going to those farmers markets, keep participating in the CSAs, and insist on your grocers telling you where your food comes from. I mean, it's a curiosity in this day and age that we can be so detached from the people who grow our food. There's a statistic that we point out in some of our publications that the average meal travels about 1,500 miles to get to your plate. And so it allows us to have kind of the best of times for food, where we can go to the local supermarket and pick up anything we want from all over the world, and have the worst of times for farmland, to have farmland continually lost in our local neighborhoods. So one of the critical things that we can all do is buy local and eat local. Secondly, to pay attention to what's going on in our communities. As I mentioned before, farmland loss is kind of an incremental process, oftentimes happens over years. And what you might notice if you're really paying attention is when that farmer down the road no longer is tilling their fields or no longer running livestock out in the field, that the land just lies fallow for a couple of years. And maybe a year or two after that, the for sale signs start popping up. And a year or two after that, a big sign goes up that advertises a new development on that property. Well, by the time that sign goes up, we're way too late to make a difference. The time to make a difference is really when you first start seeing that farmer in your community kind of struggle to make a living, or, you know, if there's an indication that they're changing plans. That's the critical time to get involved. And then to make sure that your county governments are actually taking the steps necessary to protect that farmland. So those are the three things that we really can be doing right now as individuals: buying local, paying attention, and participating in that local process that might end up turning that farmland into a new subdivision or shopping mall.
Now let's move on and talk about the Western Washington Food Shed Study. Would you like to say how that was set up and what the goal was?
Certainly. So, as I mentioned just a moment ago, one of the most important things in farmland protection is to drive home the point that in order to have local food, we need local farmland, and that there's a direct connection between local food and farmland. And we thought the best way to illustrate this would be to do a study of what we're actually growing in this region and what we're eating, and to drive home the point that what we're eating really depends on what we're able to grow here. And so we arranged with the University of Washington to get a graduate studio together, 12 graduate students from across the campus, to really focus on this Western Washington Food Shed Study. So it looks at the 19 counties in Western Washington, everything up to the crest of the Cascades, and it attempts to characterize first what we eat in that 19-county area, and secondly, what we produce, and to compare the two. And so we worked through the fall quarter on that analysis, just the comparison of what we eat and what we produce. And what we found was really quite interesting. What we found is that at best, we're producing about 40% of the food we eat. So about 60% of it is coming from outside the region. And it really varies a lot by food group. The only food that we really produce in surplus is dairy. So we're really good at producing milk, and we're producing about half again as much as we need, really. Most of the other foods that we're growing in a deficit, you know, so we're not meeting our entire needs, which means that we have to import quite a lot of food from outside the region. And these are things like fruits and vegetables, certainly grains. There are some things on that list that we're never going to produce, like citrus and coffee and chocolate, many of which we pretty heavily depend on. So we may never get to the point where we can grow 100% of what we eat. We can certainly do better than 40%.
Which foods would we have the ability to produce as much as we need of?
Well, vegetables for sure. We're very fortunate actually to be in an area that is so suitable for so many different agricultural products. So we really could be meeting not only all of our dairy, which we're doing now, all of our vegetable production we could probably meet, most of our meat and poultry needs if we wanted to. Grains, we're always going to have something of a problem with, just given the fact that we're wet and don't get enough sunshine. So we're probably always going to be importing some of those. But the second half of the study really focused on what we can do about this, how we can increase the fraction of our diet we grow locally. And one of the things that we started to play around with was the idea of modifying both the diets of people here locally, because we eat a lot more meat than USDA says we should. And if we reduce that to the USDA recommendation, we'd come a lot closer to a balance between production and consumption. but also focusing on bringing land back into production to produce some of those things that we know there's demand for, like fresh vegetables, and don't have enough produced now.
What are the steps that can be taken to bring about these goals?
So I just mentioned bringing land back into production. That's something that we're going to be focused on a lot in the next few months, is really identifying what land might still be available for agriculture. So over time, we've lost a fair amount of agricultural land, but much of that is lying below sports fields or parking lots or very low-density residential uses and could potentially be brought back into farm production. And so one of the things that we're going to be looking at is the ability to bring some land back. Devoting additional land might also mean focusing more attention on urban agriculture. And that's, of course, one of the hotter topics in farming these days, is these groups of neighborhood people who want to grow food in their neighborhoods. And so you see a lot of small farms and pea patches and backyard gardens cropping up, and that's definitely part of the solution. So that's one whole category of things we can do, is bring land back into production. The other we talked about is trying to evolve towards a better diet, a more locally focused diet, and to try to get more towards the USDA recommendations for what we eat. And there are a lot of different ways to influence that. One of the most effective is to convince the kids that this is a decent way to eat, with the idea that if you're able to convince the children in a family through school lunch programs and that sort of thing, that they'll influence their parents over time. And as a consequence, get us moving towards this USDA diet. And then a third category that we're focused on a little bit is decreasing food waste. A surprising amount of food is lost as waste in every step of the supply chain. So a tremendous amount of waste going from the farmer's field to the supermarket, in the supermarket, and then once it gets to the consumer, quite a lot of food is wasted by the consumer. So you just buy a little too much and maybe the packaging is not great. And we all have this experience of routing through the bottom of our refrigerators and throwing away a bunch of stuff that we just couldn't quite get to. And if we were able to make a significant dent in waste, it would do more than anything else, really, to achieve this balance between local production and local consumption.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
First of all, keep paying attention to what's going on out there. That farmland loss is kind of an invisible force in our community, and we really need to just keep it front of mind and keep an eye on what's happening in farmland in your community. Secondly, of course, continue to buy local and support your local farmers. Get to know them. Try to understand what they're facing at this point. It's not an easy way to make a living these days. And third is just to hold our governments, and particularly the county governments that we've focused our attention on through this study we've just done, hold them accountable for what happens to farmland in your communities. They really do have all of the resources, all of the authority that they need to be successful, and there's no reason that all of them can't be achieving at the level that the top counties are.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Dennis.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have just been listening to Dennis Canty, Pacific Northwest Director for American Farmland Trust and co-author with Alex Martinsons and Anshika Kumar of the report Losing Ground, Farmland Protection in the Puget Sound Region, published in January 2012. For more information, check on the web at www.farmland.org/Puget-Sound. Again, that's farmland.org/Puget-Sound. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.